Hello and welcome to Visa Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I am your host for today, Maria Roa, and I am delighted to be joined by Karen Tkachuk. Karen is a highly respected professional in the field of translation and language services. With a wealth of experience and knowledge in scientific and technical translation, she brings a unique perspective to the industry. Her contributions to various publications and organizations have solidified her reputation as a thought leader. With a PhD in organic chemistry, Karen is recognized as a life science expert focusing on growth and key account management for language services, and is also an award-winning translator. Congratulations, Karen. Her unique combination of scientific knowledge and language proficiency has positioned her as a highly skilled professional in the translation industry. She is currently working as Director of Sales for Life Science at Visatech, where she specializes in growing the business unit, bringing on new clients and growing strategic accounts. Karen, you're very welcome to the show. I am excited to have you to share a number of areas that I'm sure will fascinate our guests. Let's dive right into the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, I think I have already mentioned it, but you have a PhD in chemistry from Cambridge. That's quite impressive. Please tell us how you got there and from there to the localization industry.
Right. Well, that's true. Yes, I do have a PhD in chemistry from Cambridge. Well, how did I get from there to here? So I always loved, at school, I loved chemistry and I loved languages. Okay. So I've always loved science and I've always loved languages. So my education, I did, I studied chemistry, but I managed in the US terms, it would be like I have a minor in French. In European terms, I studied some French and I had a year study abroad, like an Erasmus here, which many of our listeners will recognize. I worked for a company called Rhône-Poulenc during that year in France. That's now part of Sanofi Aventis. My PhD was sponsored by Zeneca, which is now part of AstraZeneca. So big pharma was in my origins, if you like. In my early career, I moved to Ireland. I worked for Smithkline Beecham in Cork. That's now GlaxoSmithKline. That was just before it became Glaxo. Part of Smithkline Beecham became part of Glaxo. And then I moved to Dublin, worked for Bristol-Myers Squibb. So all of that early career, you would say, well, life sciences people, to life sciences people, I would say I was in small molecule drug development. That's what I did. For people who are less familiar with life sciences, I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. I was a development chemist in the pharmaceutical industry. So that's how it started, right? Along the way, I gathered a French husband in those early years.
Okay.
So I, like many people who work in language services, I have a bilingual household and multicultural existence. We moved to the US. So we emigrated, you would say, to the US in 1999, and I worked for a cosmetics and a company that made cosmetics and topical medical devices. So that's, you know, I was getting a broader understanding of the chemical industry of life sciences at that point. By topical medical devices, I mean things like gels that go into wounds or other, you know, it was so in manufacturing terms, it was similar to a cosmetic, like a moisturizer, but it was actually regulated as a medical device. And there I did a few things, but I ended up as quality assurance manager and I was in charge of their ISO 9001 quality system. So I was getting a broader expertise within life sciences, right? But I'm still, you know, not 30 years old at this point. Then I had children, right? So children took another, there are phases in careers, phases in life. After I had three children, I had stopped working in industry and I wanted to do something, wanted to go back to work in some way. And I became a freelance translator. So I became a linguist with subject matter expertise, right? There aren't that many, those of us in language services know that in order to translate, you have to have very strong subject expertise in whichever domain you're translating for, right? So being able to say, I was a PhD chemist, people just took my credibility for granted and gave me all the translation work. So I was suddenly a very successful translator quite quickly. And for many years while my children were small, I did just that. I was a freelance translator. So I did everything from audit reports for submissions to the FDA to chemistry patents for cosmetics companies. Cosmetics are very densely patented, to linguistic validation, the back translation portion of the translation requirements for clinical trials. So lots and lots of life sciences work. For many years, I was a French into English translator. So what else did I do? Huge amount of writing and training for other translators, you know, subject matter expert training, writing, editing, non-native scientists who write in English and they needed everything polished. So I did that sort of in the trenches for many years, but that gave me very broad subject expertise, right? I was exposed to an even wider range of life sciences companies, content, animal health, nutritional supplements, you name it. So that's what I did while my kids were younger. And then a few years ago, when I had, I was getting ready for an empty nest, I made this leap into a larger language services role. And I love managing global accounts and helping companies find a true partner to help them level up their global content. I thoroughly enjoy what I do. So does that tell you how I got from A to B on a long winded path?
It does. And it is actually funny that you're talking about the Erasmus or the year abroad that some, Erasmus in Europe. But because I know so many people that just by going to a country for a year to do their studies, they ended up learning that language. And then they ended up working on that country because of that, or working on something that had to do with that language and not with what they started studying. So I think it's very nice.
Well, that's when I met my husband. So I'm one of those, you know.
We
were 19. Now we're 51, you know. So it's
congratulations.
Yep. These things we can't plan in life.
But you were talking, you were like pretty much specialized in regulated content, and many are scared to get into these complex parts of the business. What's special about it? What do you like about it? Because it is true. Sometimes it is like the hardest, or I feel it is like the hardest part of all, like the regulated content.
Well, it's what I know and love, right? So there's that, right? What's special? Well, I mean, it's that word regulation. It's required. So within life sciences and a few other areas, you know, some banking, financial services. There are some other, life sciences isn't the only highly regulated area, but the companies are required to translate, and even in some cases to use particular kinds of language, plain language, say, or language suitable for the audience. It's actually regulated and checked and monitored and audited in this world. So you can't just, you know, there's very little barrier to entry for language services. People can just declare themselves a translation agency and say, we translate that. But you can't do that successfully in this regulated world. You have to use experts. You'll fail miserably if you don't really know what you're doing. So that's why people find it scary, I suppose. If you don't truly know what you're talking about, then you know you can get into trouble faster, right? So it's crucial to have a really strong expert linguist pool. And then companies must translate, right, for patient safety or for the safety of plants or animals, right? We're not always talking about human patients, but this isn't optional or about strategic decisions or about whether they're having this year, you're having a good year or a bad year, so you're going to drop a couple of languages. You can't cut a language because you're having a bad year in this regulated life sciences world, right? You must translate certain kinds of materials. Now, of course, not everything that, let's say, a pharmaceutical company does is regulated. They can translate their own website, their corporate website, or their internal training materials. They can choose to do that in the same way as any other corporation. But the core of how they bring a product to market, whether it's a drug or a medical device or a vaccine or whatever it is, that is regulated. And that is scary for some people. So that's why a lot of companies like Vistatech fence off and produce, have a special operations unit that knows exactly what's going on in that world of life sciences.
Yeah. I also know that you spend some time, lots of time at industry events like RAPS and outsourcing clinical trials. Can you share any insights from your recent conversations and what you've listened to all to at those events? I mean, like, could you mention any hot topics to our audience?
Yes, sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course. Well, first of all, I wouldn't keep on being a subject expert if I weren't reading and listening and attending at events like that, right? You have to be there to know what's going on. So we keep saying that this is a regulated field. That means that emerging regulations are always a hot topic. In 2023, so for medical devices, the noise was mainly focused on the new medical device regulation in the EU, the MDR. That has, let's say, not been implemented as planned. It's a bit of a mess. And delays are causing very great problems for manufacturers and distributors. And it could, to the extent that a lot of Europeans, for instance, were at a North American conference, RAPS, that you mentioned last year, because the regulation in Europe stifling innovation right now. So people are paying more attention to considering launching in North America to start with, right? Because so there's an example of something people are talking about, a hot topic. In clinical trials, which can be pharma or medical device, but in clinical trials, we've come off. So in the pandemic, there was a pandemic driven high point for decentralizing trials and working into a mix of in-person and remote trials. Obviously, when we couldn't do in-person, when everybody was struggling with what they were going to do as a result of the pandemic. So I would say that we're now off that pandemic-driven high point for decentralized trials and settling into some sort of new normal of a mix of in-person and decentralized trials. So that calls for updated guidelines, some perhaps regulations. That's a hot topic. Diversity and inclusion in clinical trials is a related hot topic, because one of the things that COVID that is by no means the only example, but it's an example many of our listeners will be familiar with. COVID didn't affect all races, all ages, all everybody equally, right? And clinical trials historically, I'm generalizing hugely, but historically have had a high number of white males in them, right? So if you're not a white man, the clinical trial results may not represent how the product is going to act in you. Now, I'm generalizing hugely. We could talk for weeks and weeks and weeks, but so diversity and inclusion in clinical trials is not just a matter of social justice. It's a matter of patient safety, right? If we don't know how a product might react in a certain population, if the clinical trial has been done on a population that did not include any of that kind of person. So that's a hot topic at the events I was at, and lots of companies are working very hard to onboard, to recruit a more diverse population for all sorts of ongoing trials. What else? Real world evidence, real world data, and real world evidence are other hot topics. So the idea that not everything, we get data from clinical trials, right? But also physicians, care providers have data based on using a medication, a device in a certain context over time in a certain body of patients. And that would be called real world data that can produce real world evidence that something works in a certain population. That was not, then that data was not produced from a clinical trial. So that's another hot topic. And the FDA just issued new guidelines on that, for instance, at the very end of 2023. So those are some examples.
What about digital technologies and AI? Is that a hot topic inside?
Yes, AI is a hot topic everywhere. Hey, it took us everywhere, like a whole 15 minutes to talk about AI. You're right. It's a hot topic.
It's not an industry that it's been missed, right? I mean,
right. No, you're right. From dietary supplements to pharma to, well, everyone's wondering how it might assist in researching formulations, in researching, in finding new active ingredients, new medicines that work, in personalizing medicine, where they can apply it safely. Yes, it's a hot topic everywhere. Yes, that's
yeah. And that note, everyone is asking. You said like that happens like everyone, everywhere, every industry. But everyone is asking now how to implement AI into the services. How does that look for the life science industry?
Right. So for the broad life science industry, that would be too long an answer perhaps for me to tackle, but for us at Vistatech, how it looks is, so this is a world where we focus on risk mitigation and compliance, right? We talk about fundamentally, we're talking about mitigating risk, and using AI adds risk, right? We all know that. We've all seen all the glaring examples. So we are looking in language services, we're looking at opportunities for time or cost savings with our clients. And we have an array of options and even some case studies at this point. But we're not facing a situation in language services for life sciences where clients are just want to remove humans from the loop, right? We're not looking at aggressive adoption that we might see in other commercial, other tech even, we might see in other verticals, right? So in this world of life sciences, where regulatory bodies can come down hard and fast on documentation flaws, because there's risk to life and limb, for goodness sake, we're not the first target, let's say. But yes, of course, companies are looking at how they can use AI, especially in the world of real world evidence. There's people using a lot of data analytics and using AI there. And there are some areas where there's success, but then there's other areas, of course, where there's just too much risk. So
yeah. We just mentioned life sciences, and I feel like sometimes people aren't exactly sure what we mean when we just say life sciences. Can you tell us what client base does the life science business unit at Vistatech cover?
Yeah, you make me laugh because I get this question so often that I wrote an article about it.
Yeah, you've been saying like animals, not only cosmetics, not only, pills, not only medical, not only...
Yeah. So here's what I would say. So one way to think about it is that you've extracted something. It's not in the ground or in the field, right? So that would be agriculture or energy, right? So we're past it's in the ground or the field. It's out of the ground or the field, a factory, but it's not yet ready to go into a patient, right? If it's going into a patient, then we're in healthcare. Right. And if it's still in the ground, we're in some plants, like I said, agriculture wherever the source comes from. So that could mean finished products that are, like I've said, a vaccine or a medicine or a pacemaker, right? That's medical devices and drugs, and related businesses like clinical trials, which we've mentioned. These are businesses that help get products to market, right? But it's broader. So it could be a treatment for crop, like a herbicide or a fertilizer for a crop, right? It could be a food supplement. It could be the thing, the added nutrient that's going into the orange juice that you buy at the supermarket. I don't know about what it's like where you are, but where I am, I can buy orange juice with vitamin C in it, or with added fiber, or all, you know, these are products that are added to things that humans are going to consume, so they're regulated. The software tools that control the data related to anything that I've just said, right? Software platforms, solutions that, you know, like any industry, we, you know, there's a massive amount of data. What else? The manufacturers that produce, I mean, the syringes, I mentioned a pacemaker. Those are complex engineering, right? These are, you know, they're made in a factory in the way that a part for a car or a plane would be made, right? It's material science to produce the very best syringe plunger, or right, the very best.
Yeah.
You know, you can see how deep could we go with this. So it's any much. It's pretty. It's the packaging. It's the cardboard box and the paperwork that goes inside your COVID test. Right. There's so many pieces, and all of that falls under life sciences. And
yeah, but it would anything be also in the race. Like, the companies who do the research for those, I mean, for the for the test. Sorry,
right?
For the medical
test.
So tests.
Those would be CROs, often clinical research organizations. So some pharmaceutical companies will do all that work internally, and others will contract out to research organizations, CROs. That's a massive industry. Also, there are contract manufacturing and development organizations. There's all sorts of things that can be contracted out. Yes, that would all fall under life sciences. So pretty much, I would say anybody that's following what we call GXP regulations, good manufacturing practices, good laboratory practices, or certain regulations like, I don't know, part 21 of the FDA's Code of Regulations, Code of Federal Regulations, which is like speaking a foreign language to you, Maria, I know, but that's complete. That's ordinary, everyday languages to life scientists people. All the related global laws, right? We mentioned the EU's medical device regulation. Anybody that's underneath one of those laws is in life sciences, and there's a massive, massive amount of business. So in terms of... you asked initially, what does that mean for our business unit at Vistatech? It means that any of those, any translation work that would be falling under those regulations or related, you know, medical writing needs or anything that has to be compliant with that, with this world, would be housed in that business unit.
Yeah, so I mean, as you say, this sounds like crazy for me sometimes because I'm not an expert. You are the expert, but I think it's like mostly what you said is like it is a wide range of companies that involve from like research, development, manufacturing, everything that includes like, I don't know, pharmaceutical, medical devices, cosmeceuticals, food processing.
Yes,
I mean,
that's right. The works,
so
and all the
things,
software,
right?
Platforms that are used,
yeah, software,
to make any,
yeah,
of that happen. Absolutely. There's a lot of software localization in life sciences. Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, that's it. Yeah.
Pretty big. Yeah. Much bigger than many people think whenever you talk about life sciences and you just think about like a small piece of the market, of the industry, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, we came to the end, but before we go, I want to ask you, is there anything else you would like to share with our audience today?
Well, thank you for having me. I love what I do. So I'm delighted to talk about it. What am I? So in 2024, I am looking forward to hosting a series of a podcast a bit like you're doing right now, Maria. We're at Avistatech. We've got so many interesting people within life sciences to talk to that we decided, we being myself and my colleagues, Teresa Lawless and Maria Mateos, are going to host conversations like this with people that we love to talk with. So we're doing that in 2024, and I am excited about that. So watch out.
Yeah, as you mentioned before, I'm not an expert in life sciences. So we thought, who better than our life sciences experts from our business unit to cover these topics and have their own podcast. So I'm super excited for this. I think you guys are going to do great. So please watch out to our audience, our Bista Talks audience, because we're going to be having some episodes coming out soon on life sciences in focus. So looking forward to it, Karen.
Me too.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. That's the end of today's show with Karen Tkaczyk. Please make sure to tune in again to see and or to listen to the next Bista Talk show, where we will be discussing more interesting topics with interesting people from all around the world.